The anonymous landlord is more than just making profit from property. The anonymous landlord is about making profit in many different ways. It's not a product, it's not a training course, it's not something you can just have. It's a way of life, a quality of life. It's a business mindset, a system of automation that shapes the way you invest in property and the way you think about property. An anonymous landlord makes loads of money and continues to grow and grow and grow wealth without giving up any time or energy or effort. Because what's the point in making loads of money from property if you can't enjoy it? I'm Tom Soan and this is The Anonymous Landlord. Hi, this is Tom Soane, and welcome to another episode, a very special episode of The Anonymous Landlord. Now, you've all heard about the EICR, especially if you're a landlord or a property investor or a letting agent. Anyone involved in property will have heard about EICR, the Electrical Installation Condition Report. Whether you like it or you hate it, it's law. You've got to get it done. So, I'm really privileged to have one of the leading electricians in the country right here with me to explain his view on the EICR, to talk about how you can prepare for it, what sort of things are involved in it. But what is the EICR? What is the report? How are people going to analyze it? And how much is it going to cost? So hopefully we can get some real useful information as landlords, and I'm a landlord myself and a property investor, so I'm going to be learning something today too, and I hope you're going to learn with me. But I'm really privileged because right now, as you can probably imagine, this guy is phenomenally busy because everyone needs an EICR. So he's probably fed up with it already, but I am really pleased that Luke has been able to join me from Ellie Electrical. Thank you very much for joining me, Luke. How are you?
Morning, Tom. Yeah, very well, thanks. And yes, very busy, but always got a bit of time for you. Don't you worry.
Oh, you're a star. Now, Luke does a lot of my work for my letting agent, for both my letting agents, actually, which is very positive. So he's very kindly agreed to share some insights into an advice for everybody here. So let's crack on, shall we, mate?
Absolutely, yes.
Awesome. So, look, first of all, let's open up with, give us your thought, your opinion, if you like, on the whole EICR thing. What does it mean to you?
It's been a long time coming. So the regulations are the big book we use. It's sort of guidance to help electricians stick to the law. But there are regulations in there that are very difficult to understand. They're very sort of long-winded. And it doesn't really, once you're outside of the actual industry as an installer or test inspector, it's very difficult to understand those. So there's always been regulations and guidance on how often systems should be tested. It's been written at the bottom of the paperwork for a long time, but it's not been enforceable. So we've at least taken one step into actually starting to bring that knowledge of minimum requirements to the landlords, to users and to everyone really, because it's going to help educate the tenants, which is a massive market as well. So it should improve everybody's electrical safety as sort of the years go by and more things are done and people understand more. So it's a good thing.
I absolutely agree with you, mate. I know it's a cost and it's an expense, and we'll talk a bit about that in a bit, but really we're talking about people's lives, right? And not just tenants' lives, but landlords' lives too.
Absolutely. And the thing is that, you know, so certain regulations like Part P is a building regulation that's come in because there was, you know, an excessive sort of amount of electric shocks from appliances and various other things. So they brought that safety in. So it kind of, there's things been involved for new builds for a long time, but with your, you know, with your landlords, with tenants, with sort of properties, with maybe HMOs with a lot of turnaround, there hasn't really been that checked and to ensure that consistency of safety on the electrical system. It is a good thing. With some of the systems you see, it feels painful. It feels painful. It's another cost. It's another stress. But actually, when you think about it, you get your gas done without thinking twice. It's dangerous if it's not looked after. I need to look after it. You know, if there was a wall about to fall down, you'd get it done because you wouldn't want it landed on someone. And if you don't have the mentality to repair what's dangerous, you shouldn't be able to handle. Have a responsibility of care. You know, it's a minimum moral level is to make sure someone won't die in your property.
That's a really good point, mate. That's a really good point. Do you know what? It's funny, isn't it? Because, you know, you get, let's say your car breaks down. You get that fixed straight away.
Yep.
Or even if you, you know, you get to the end of your service period, you know, you need a new service, you go and get your car serviced. But people won't get their electrical installation serviced.
No.
And that's an investment. The car's not even an investment. This is an investment.
Absolutely. And the thing is, as well, it goes also to the installs. You know, the quality of an install can have effects on a long-term system because it would basically survive for a much longer amount of time, and it would degrade slower. So there's a lot of things which are hidden on an electrical system, which you can't tell how fast it's degrading, which of course, as we know, can lead to either electric shock or fire. And it's those hidden things that we're trying to catch in these EICRs to make sure that they're not going to cause a problem.
Yeah, great answer, mate. That's spot on, I think. So look, let's talk about the actual EICR, Electrical Installation Condition Report. So let's talk about the report itself. Could you give us, I want to say, a detailed analysis of what the report is and what it contains, but you know what? This isn't a bloody exam or anything, so you're not, but just your best.
I'm happy to go through a lot of it. It feels a little bit alien if you're not used to reading it. I speak to a lot of landlords that say, I don't know what I'm looking at. Tell me what I'm looking at. But if you do give it a little bit of time, although some of the reading, some of the results, some of the wording will be difficult to understand, you know, it might not register all the time. Actually, a lot of it is reasonably self-explanatory. For example, it's all broken down into categories, and each category is a summary of that part of the system. And at each stage, it's trying to tell you a little bit of information about what that particular category refers to. So it starts with who you are and who we are as electricians or whoever you're using. It then starts with the property. It then goes on to things like the type of system, which is basically the supply into the property. And it's important to make sure that those foundations are set because it's a legal document. So you have to have all the correct information on there. It then, in most cases, the certificates do vary. They're based on model forms, so there are slight variants. But fundamentally, it moves on to observations. And these are things which have been seen to be an issue, or we've inspected behind somewhere and it's shown a problem. These should have enough detail for you to understand what they are. If they don't have enough detail, you should be getting your electrician to reissue that certificate with that information. You should be able to understand those observations, why they've been picked up. Now, it doesn't mean to say you have to understand the regulation behind it. That's for the experts to do. But you should absolutely be able to read that section of observations and realize, well, that's a broken socket. It's in the back bedroom. That's, you know, it's a damaged cable. It's behind a kitchen unit or whatever it is. It shouldn't just say broken socket, damaged cable. There should be information on that that helps you understand exactly what it is. And we basically use it as an example as well, is to say to people like insurance companies and things like that, they like to see you're doing something. It doesn't matter if something fails. It's the same as you know, like you say, we're going back to your cars and your MOTs. It doesn't matter if it fails. The important thing is if it fails, you sort it, you regularly check it. You're then seen to be consciously putting an effort into maintaining that system. And that is better than just getting someone to repair the work and reissuing you an EICR, because you haven't proven that you've found faults, you've repaired it. It's just, well, the system's fine. Moving on to the next section, you've got an itemized list of what's been inspected. Again, these vary. There's expanded versions, there's shorthand versions. But these are basically, this is just a big checklist. And this is where you get your codes. So you might get an FI, which sometimes people call F1. It's not, it's FI for further investigation. It means we don't know enough about that particular thing. We have to look a little bit further to know whether it's a safe and it's a pass, or if it's not safe and it's a fail. You then go down the three main codes, which is a C1, a C2, and a C3. A C1 means it's dangerous now. You can put your finger in a hole, there's an exposed cable, there's something happening now, and you've got to do it quickly. In a lot of instances, we would recommend getting them done at the time of the visit because they're very rare. They're normally a small issue. So we'd always recommend the landlord sort of giving us a little bit of leeway for getting the electrician to do that. Your C2s, again, they have to be done. They're just not quite as urgent. At the moment, the government have given 28 days to allow you to arrange for that to be rectified. And then you've got C3s, which like an MOT, is an advisory. There's an improvement that we can make. You're not under a legal obligation to improve that. It's not a direct safety concern, but there is a usability issue or there is something that can be improved to the current standards. Beyond that, you're really into the unique test results of what you've been asked the electrician to test. So if they're testing a consumer unit in a property, they are looking at labeling and providing details on all those circuits. It starts with circuit names and what they've been called. It then moves on to things such as how many points are served. And this is counted by the number of sockets. It's counted by the number of lights and it's individual to each circuit. So you can actually monitor if there's modifications made and there's no paperwork for it. So you can always sort of keep up to date with, is this the most recent paperwork for the property? It then goes on to various other test results that detail things about that circuitry and whether or not the cable's good and whether or not the protection's good, because certain size fuses won't protect the cable, certain type of fuses don't protect life. So there are different things that need to be installed for different scenarios, such as a shower. You always want to make sure a shower has RCD protection. You know, a standard fuse, a standard circuit breaker, it's there to protect the circuit. It's a circuit breaker. An RCD is there for life protection. So it's important that when you're in a scenario where life is more likely to be sort of harmed, is that you have that extra protection in place. I've gone on a bit, but there's a little bit of information about the certificate. And there's more to it than that as well. It can be broken down even more into the, you know, when you look at a cable, there's something called a resistance, and you want to make sure that's high enough so that you don't get a problem between the actual, you know, the live cables. And some of our tests actually test what's behind the scenes, because as that starts to degrade, as that insulation starts to degrade, that resistance basically goes down, and eventually, you know, your live, your neutral cable or your line and neutral, it becomes a problem and you start to get more higher risk of fire and things like that. You get heat build up and stuff. So it's a lot of the tests are behind the scenes. They're not just a visual, oh, that light switch works. that's okay. That one looks all right. It's behind the scenes that ultimately we're testing, which is why it's so important to get this done, because almost anybody can check to see if a light switch has got a crack through it. But not everybody can check to see if the cable going to the light switch is still safe.
Brilliant. I mean, that whole answer there, I mean, I can tell you're an electrician, because a lot of your your mentality, right, needs to be, you know, it's a process of elimination, isn't it? You start here and you test this. And your whole answer there was so perfectly structured from start to finish and very articulate. So I think actually that was a real detailed answer that people will benefit from. So I really appreciate it. Okay. It just helps people understand, doesn't it, what this report actually is.
Yeah, it's not a black magic. It's not a dark art. You know, there's a lot that's easy knowledge. You know, doing it and being competent to do it and experienced enough to do it, that's a different thing. But it's what we're doing with these EICRs and any faults and things picked up from that, it's not dark magic. You should be able to fully understand what needs to be done, and you should be able to take that information from the report. If you don't, speak to your electrician. Speak to someone that knows. You can even, you know, search for it on the internet. It's all the answers are there. And as a landlord, give yourself a bit of time, because this isn't going away. This is going to happen every 5 years is the longest period, or change of occupancy. You know, So if you get a lot of turnarounds, then, you know, you're looking at having to do this a little bit more often than you would perhaps have thought originally. So
you're absolutely right, mate. This is here to stay and it's law. So we should understand it. And I think that's kind of why I wanted to get you on here. And I know you're busy, so I appreciate it. But it's really so that, first of all, people can understand what the report actually is, why you've got to have it, Because, you know, think back to when the gas safety certificates came in or the gas safety inspections came in. Yeah. At first, it was a bit, what's this now? What have I got to do? No one's explained it. They've just told you've got to have it. And then loads of plumbers realized that they were going to make a ton of money and it was great.
Yeah.
So now it's the same thing. And in 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years time, this will become normal. And I'm going to get into the costs involved in a minute. We'll go through that in a bit later. How much is it going to cost? What sort of work, what sort of costs you've seen and prices you've seen and so on. That'd be really interesting. But first, I'd really like to find out, in your best opinion, what are the most common issues that you're seeing at the moment and your team are seeing?
So some of the most common that we see is simply that it's not very polished off. You get a lot of C3s. So, for example, you may be looking at your consumer unit. Sometimes it's called a DB, distribution board. And you're actually looking at the circuits. What you'll find is some of them may not be labeled, may not be named. You may find that you might have three socket circuits, for example, in a three-bed house. You might have a separate circuit for your kitchen, one for your upstairs and one for your downstairs. And you may find that the labeling on the board just says sockets, sockets, sockets. So there's little things like that that's not going to, you know, raise a big risk, a big issue, because you know that's what it's doing. But it's good to get those identified, because if there's a problem, you can then look further and you can do it quicker. Some of the other things is just general wear and tear as well. So, you know, the switches on sockets and light switches, they just don't operate sort of securely and safely, and they don't make a good sort of latch. Older sockets, they become loose. So what happens is when you plug your plug in, there should be a little bit of resistance, because it's basically brass or copper and it's pushing on those pins. It's a slide connector. But as they get, the more worn they get, the socket becomes loose in there. Now what will happen is eventually that will become too loose. That will be a point of heat buildup. And again, that's a risk of fire. Other things is actually bad installation practices. It's actually probably, if I had to single one thing out, it would be that. It would be kitchen fitters saying we can do electrics, bathroom fitters stripping out bonding when they shouldn't be. They think the new regulations say we don't need bonding. The problem is the installation age that they're working on does need it. So they're refitting these bathrooms, they're taking out the cable for the scrapyard, and actually we're going in to check and we're saying it's fouled. You've got, you know, your lighting circuit doesn't have RCD protection, or your shaver's sort of in the wrong position, or whatever they've done during the refurb. They think, oh, we don't, you know, it's fine, it doesn't matter. Of course, when we're going in now and inspecting these, the landlords are going, well, it was new 5 years ago, or 10 years ago, or 3 years ago. And bad installation practices is something that's very prominent, very prominent.
You must have quite a big problem in your industry with DIY electricians, like just homeowners and tenants and landlords that just go in and do some sort of fitting or do some sort of thing.
It seems like you're plugging for work. Don't touch electrics. And you speak to some people, or don't touch, you know, gas and electrics. If I can't see it, it scares me. But there are some people that give it a go. And there is an element of, you want to give it a go, it's your house, that's fine. But the overspill is that work then becomes much more commonplace and is seemingly acceptable. And then the property gets sold, because there's nothing enforced at the moment for ensuring your electrics are safe before you sell a property, which is baffling. I think there should be minimum, but that's for another video. it just overspills. So people can change sockets, light switches. That's basically on them. But the difference is, as an electrician, we can test, we can verify, we're insured against problems. We can ensure that what we're doing is up to the new standards. We can make sure that what we're finding as we look a little bit deeper and behind things isn't going to cause a problem. The DIYs don't know that. You know, they know enough to do the polished bit out the front, the bit that looks nice. But the stuff behind the scenes is the worst stuff. So there are more complex parts that are not that complex for electricians that don't seem to be a problem, but when you work do the calculations and you work out and you explain why it's a problem, it's very obvious. Like, you can have a spur off of a ring. So someone might have a kitchen ring, decide to put an outside socket. Well, that as that spurred off of the ring, that's perfectly compliant, providing you do it the right way. The problem with that is they will then go to another point in the garden and another point in the garden, and that's that. Of course, you get to it and say, I've got to take your sockets off. You can only have one. Or we've got to install, you know, we've got to step the fuse down. Oh, I can't, because I plug everything in at the end socket. And, you know, you just wish that they had used someone with qualifications and knowledge in the first hand, and you wouldn't have had to have had that conversation about that DIY work and things that they had done being such an issue when they think it's fine. So it's, yeah, that's definitely a battle.
It's a really good insight as well to your world. And I wanted to, one thing you've mentioned, I just want to add into this here, and we will in a minute, we'll talk about, like I say, the costs involved and so on and so on. But also later on, I want to find out a bit about your advice for landlords and property owners that they can do in preparation for all of this. But before we get into that, there's a big problem with finding the right electricians, right? Now, obviously, you're an electrician. So, okay, there's you can go to LE Electrical and that's job done. But what does a regular Joe Schmo need to look for in an electrician to make sure they're getting the right person for the job?
History. I think history is a good thing. I think experience speaks for itself. I think if you're looking at an electrician that's fresh out of college, his knowledge is going to be high, but you're actually not advised to use someone that's that inexperienced on doing an EICR, because an older property, it needs to comply with the regulations at the time of the installation. So we reference the old regulations that go back to the 16th edition. We have copies of those to make sure that properties that are sort of over 25 years or at that sort of mark still comply. As a new electrician may not have access to those documents or be able to verify what's happening. So you get a lot of instances, oh, it's a plastic consumer unit, it's got to be changed. Well, it's not the case. It met the regulations at the time. It's fine to keep it that way now, but is there a higher risk involved? You can still look at things and say, you know, you should really improve that because it's going to cause a problem. And that sort of experience, that sort of history, it can be gained just simply by when did you get your qualifications? How long have you been doing it? Just a conversation with them, with an open mind, and speak to a few. You'll get a feel. You know, you can't just go by what's said on online reviews. When someone's got 5 online reviews, you know, they haven't gone to the pub now, but, you know, I've heard of stories of certain people going to the pub, getting all their mates to fill a certain business card out and sending it in, and oh wow, they're top of the page. So they're a very good start, the reviews, to find that company, to look at, add them as your top priority to communicate with, but always communicate with them, always talk to them. If they're prepared to give you a bit of time on the phone and then explain things, that's normally a good sign. But also, there are a lot of small businesses, and there's, you know, they might work singly or in a pair as a pair of electricians. They might not have, you know, 2 hours to give you to talk about why a pendant has to be changed. In a, you know, because it's in a bathroom and it's 3 foot long. So, but definitely, you know, use that sort of history and that experience. What have they done before? Who have they worked for? You know, it sort of helps. It does help. And don't be afraid to ask a company or an electrician for qualifications of the people turning up. They've got to have them to get registered with people at the ECA, the NIC, EIC, and NAPET, amongst others. Because they're your competent person scheme. They're basically ensuring that we're competent at what we do across all things. Another thing to do is on each of their websites, there is a list of what that particular electrician or company is registered to do, because there are different qualifications. Some things you can't do. So you've got portable appliance testing, you've got electric vehicle charging, you've got EICRs. They're actually separate qualifications. Not everybody can do all of these things. So there's only, you know, not every electrician can actually do electrical installation condition reports.
And no,
I've found them. And I won't talk about them, but it's they thought they could do it because they was an electrician. And when you start speaking to them and saying, well, do you know, what about this and what about that? And the regulations that come into play from a sort of backward compatibility side of things, it's, I didn't know that. So they're
qualifications. Really interesting. That's really interesting, yeah. Because I didn't know that. And I've been in this game for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I just thought an electrician was an electrician and you were qualified to be an electrician.
No.
And I bet, I'm actually willing to bet that most of the people that will listen to this, mm-hmm. the millions and the millions that will listen to this, will also not be aware that actually there are specific qualifications for each electrician to do each thing. Yep. So just quickly run through what those types of things are, if you can think of them off the top of your head.
Okay, so you've got, so the first one is a more basic one. It's someone that can install but can't sign their own work off. The next one is someone that can install and sign their own work off. And then there's an additional qualification to that, which gives you your Part P qualification, which allows you to work in a domestic environment. So as a minimum, if you've got an electrician, changing a fuse board, helping you refit your kitchen, doing your electrics in there, or doing a rewire, you need someone that can sign off their own work and is Part P competent, or isn't going to sign off their work, but partners with someone that does. It's called third-party certification. So there are some electricians which have got that third-party certification, and they work with non-qualified electricians, and between them, they can issue you the paperwork you're legally required to keep. Above that, you've then got qualifications for inspection and testing, which is where the EICRs fall in. It's another sort of level of education. It's a lot harder to pass the course. It's in the region of 60% that take the course pass. And so it's not an easy thing. It's not something that everyone just gets because it's a quick test. It's almost a course in itself, really. And then beyond that, you go into the skill sets that are more specific. So you may have qualifications relating specifically to the addition of, you can't add a new circuit in a board with a new trip switch. You can't change the fuse board. However, as a plumber, as an intruder or security alarm engineer, you may be qualified to install an additional point so that you can power your particular appliance up with it. Slightly rarer on that front. Normally it's a big business thing. They've then got guys with just those qualifications. You've then got your electric vehicle charging points. You've got your solar. You've got your portable appliance testing. So all of those are defined courses, exams, and then certificates of qualification get issued on those.
That's a real key point, actually. And I really want to make sure that anyone who is listening to this, just rewind that bit and make sure that you are checking that your electrician, that your chosen electrician is qualified to do those bits. And this goes a bit further, I think, because this could really blow up in a lot of landlords' faces. Excuse the pun. But if you get an electrician, and this is just basic law, if you get an electrician out and they do some sort of EICR and they give you that, or they do any kind of installation that they're not qualified to do, and something goes wrong and the tenant is seriously injured in some way, then Mr. and Mrs. Landlord, that's on you because you instructed the contractor. Now, the contractor will, of course, then face penalty for that. It's just basic law, isn't it? Contractor will face penalty, but you instructed them, Mr. and Mrs. Landlord, so it comes back to you. So please rewind that bit, get your pen and paper out, write it down, because that is key. And just want to very quickly actually touch on what insurances that electrician would need.
So first and primarily, any installation work or any significant work, you will always require public liability. Right. It's just proven that you've left your tools out, someone's tripped over it, hit the head, and they've had to take 3 days off work. So you always need public liability as a minimum, but as a tester and inspector, you need personal indemnity. And this is basically, it covers things like you're going to do your best of your ability and you can't be held responsible for a product failure. And you can't be responsible for what you can't see, but you can have a very good educated guess that what you're doing and what your information you're handing over is as well-rounded and as complete as possible. And that personal indemnity is the insurance for that. And you should have that to do condition reports. That should be monitored by the CPS, by the competent person schemes, which is your NAPIT, your ECA, your NICIC, Alexa, those sort of things. So they should verify that internally in order for them to be a competent person. But it is, it's easy to check, you know. Pretty much that's the only critical insurance. You may then have specifics. If someone's, if the electrician is going to sign off fire alarms or do fire alarm test and inspecting, he may have a bolt on that covers for that.
Yeah.
So it's, should always, again, you should always check.
Great information. Great. I mean, this is like one of those episodes where, look, I get quite a lot of investors, a lot of landlords, I get a lot of different sort of finance guys and all that sort of stuff. But this is one of those episodes where it's a hot topic right now. Everybody's affected by it in this industry. Yeah. And mate, you're giving me gold here. This is absolute gold. So, right, I just wanted to work through some of the costs involved, right? We don't need to get into massive detail about each individual piece of work, but first of all, the EICR itself, there is obviously a charge for the EICR. What price ranges are you seeing at the moment in the industry?
Huge. You've got, you know, got guys out there for doing it for between 80, and I've got electricians that are really busy that won't take on anything less than 200 for a property. So it's a huge disparity, and you think, well, why? Well, the top end are just busy. They don't particularly want the work right now because they've already got enough.
Yeah.
And if people are going to start paying that, then they're going to start dropping off the clients that are paying less and paying and doing that. The people doing it at 80, there's a question, you know, a question arises about how long they're spending there, and it could be as little as an hour. And how much are they actually inspecting? How much are they actually doing? How much of that report and those figures, which are supposed to be either calculated or tested, how much of that is, who's going to check?
Yeah.
And it's very then difficult. This is where trust comes into it. It's very difficult. You can't sort of tie everyone with the same brush. But that lower end, you've got to look at the hourly rate of an electrician as standard and assume, well, if he's spending less than 2 hours there, what is he checking? If you've got a one-bedroom studio apartment, maybe even a two-bedroom flat, it's doable within 2 hours. You get a percentage of socket fascias, light switches, lights down. You can inspect behind them. You can get all your tests done in that time. When you go more into a three-bed house or maybe, even a flats with electric heating, there is more tests to do. There's more circuits to do. There's more paperwork to do. And really that price should be going up in somewhere in the region of between probably about 100 X VAT for maybe a sole trader up to maybe sort of 160 as a starting point for a business with multiple staff. I'd say that's really your window.
Yeah.
So sort of averaging sort of in the 120 to 160 probably for a limited company, because kit costs so much, there's not many electricians that aren't VAT registered. Who likes a VAT man? So that sort of window, and then obviously depends on them if you've got like agents and various things that obviously they've got to have certain costs taken into account because they've got to verify those certificates. They're dealing with the electrician as well, and everyone needs to make sure that it's sustainable. If you're going to be paying that sort of price, it's not a sustainable price. Is that electrician going to be contactable in 5 years? Are they going to be able to do the repair work? Are they, are they reputable enough to be insured against for the, so it's the lower end of what I'm seeing is a worry.
Yeah, so, me too. It's like, it's the old MOT thing, isn't it? I actually did a live broadcast about this last week, I think it was. About when you go for your EICR and you're looking for the lowest cost for the actual report, then it's the same as an MOT. You know, you go to one of those garages where they say, we'll do you an MOT for £5 or £10.
Yeah.
And miraculously, they find loads of stuff that they've got to do.
Yeah.
Because their entire business is built on them doing work to your car. And it's the same. I'm seeing this already. I think it's going to be a bit of a problem. And I think there's going to be some further regulation on something here, because I agree with you. You pay that lower price, you pay someone £50, £60 to do an EICR. They're going to find a few hundred quids worth of stuff to do.
Absolutely.
To make some money.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I'm with you on that, mate. And I think there's going to be more regulation on that. Like you say, cutting corners and what have you.
Yeah, the problem is it's the enforcing of it. It's the issue we're fighting in the industry is what do you do about a cowboy? It is literally at a point, which unfortunately is a trade thing. It's not just an electrical industry thing. You find bad work. What is the next step? It's repair it and move on at the moment because the headache of trying to action it and hold that person accountable isn't worth it. There needs to be a better way introduced for all trades in, you know, sort of road traders and things for when they do bad work. Don't get me wrong, I've read some EICRs and they're appalling. You wonder how they even got done. And you read some that have got the odd mistake in it. And we probably do the same. There are probably mistakes on it. But there's a difference between mistakes made just because you've made a general human error and I don't have long on this job. I've got to go. I won't test that. I'll make that bit up. I won't look behind there. And that's what you're ultimately saying. You're paying less, you're getting less, which means you're getting your bit of paper that may even say a pass. But there's a word you've got to look out for, or not a word, but three letters, L-I-M, LIM, limitation. If you're seeing that report and it's got LIM written everywhere, that's because they haven't checked it.
Brilliant. I mean, like I say, the reason I'm saying that this is all gold that you're giving me here is because it's so new to everybody and people that will be listening to this need to understand. And so they need to know, look, if you've seen that report and it's got LIM written all over it, then it hasn't been checked, like you say, and now people know. People now know what qualifications they need to look for, what insurances they need to find, what prices they're going to pay. All right. Well, look, so assuming then now they understand this, which is, which is very, I'm really appreciative for, what do you think landlords can do before the EICR, I guess, to prepare and to do anything themselves to kind of improve their chances of a successful result?
Yeah, so it's basically anything. There's no point getting too carried away. If you can look at your old fuse board and it's something out of the ark, or it was, you know, something spare left over from the Titanic, there's no point. It's at that age, it's going to fail on multiple things. But on newer consumer units that have been done maybe in the last sort of 15 years, you're going to expect a high level of pass rates or minor repairs. But visual, if you can look at something and you can see holes in things which come complete usually, it means that hole's been put in it. If you can then put your little finger in, if there's holes in the top of your fuse board, it can't be. Again, test your sockets and switches. There's a brand called Socket and See. There's other test manufacturers such as Martindale, Fluke, Q-Tech, Mega. They do a plug-in tester and it doesn't give you any readings. You plug it in and it gives you three little lights to tell you whether something called polarity is right. And that tells you that your live, your neutral, and your earth are actually wired the correct way around. That will also help you understand whether or not your socket is getting older and is loose, because as you wobble that, the lights will either stay on because you've got a good connection, or it will go on, off, because those little things will start to help you understand that accessories around the property are starting to become overworn and may need replacing. Again, exposed cables is a big thing on pendants. You look at that pendant, they've had a heavy chandelier, or they've had a heavy lampshade on it, and that pendant has either stretched or it's become detached, and you can now see the blue and the brown live cables inside. And they're now exposed outside that fitting. But they're gonna need to either fixing back up if it's fixable, the cable slightly shortening, or the pendant replacing if it's cracked or damaged. Little things like that, you can keep an eye out for. But actually properly checking between tenancies or, you know, doing your own inspections, you know what you've got on your property. Taking a conscious effort, or making a conscious effort, I should say, to look at your electrical installation. And a folder on your computer. Put photos, put certificates, keep all the information in one place.
Good idea. Really good idea.
It's an easy point of reference then. It's electrical. Let me look in the folder.
Very interesting that. That's a good tip as well. You know, I think a lot of people don't organize themselves. Or, you know, if you're using a letting agent, then they should be doing all of this, right? Because the whole point, by the way, of this anonymous landlord movement, philosophy, whatever you want to call it, is I want to try and bring landlords away from the dealings with their properties. Because do you know what? I'd probably say if I went round and spoke to 100 DIY landlords, I would expect around 75% of them to not know the legislation, the most important legislation, the most important compliance processes and everything they need to do. I would expect 75% of them not to know, but they think they know.
Yeah.
And it's probably the same with this, which is why I'm so glad that you came on. But I just wanted to ask you actually one, I'm just going to chuck a question in here. Are electricians loving this?
It is not an enjoyable job.
Oh.
It's very repetitive. You know, you're going in job after job after job. It's very repetitive. But at the same time, there is an underlying sort of positivity, and that is that people are going to be more aware of the electrical systems in their properties. Good which point. Means there is going to be a higher minimum standard, which means that better electricians, like myself, are going to be busier for longer. And the worst electricians should be starting to get weeded out, or they should start to improve the quality of what they're doing, which will ultimately benefit everybody. So It's a bit of a left hand, right hand. There's a lot of positives for us as electricians, but the actual electrical installation condition reports, it's very repetitive. It's the same thing. You're going into a lot of people's properties, which of course in this pandemic is something that's taking extra precaution and it's taking that extra sort of bit of thinking to consider.
Do you know, I had an argument with a guy, this is going back a few months now. I spoke to a landlord. I can't remember how we got into the conversation now, but anyway, I'd said to him, hey, why don't you think about having an agent manage your property for you? And he said, no, I don't need that. I don't need that. So I said, all right, well, look, let's check just to make sure you've got the right stuff in place. And then you can go off and carry on being a DIY landlord. And I asked him, first thing I said, gas safety certificate. No, I don't need it. And I said, well, you do. It's the law. No, I don't need it. All my stuff's fine. You know, boiler's fine. Everything's fine. I said, no, it probably is, but you need it. It's law. And he said, nah, he said, if anyone bothers to come and catch me for that, then I'll deal with it then. And I said, well, no, because if something goes horribly wrong, then Your tenant's seriously injured, then you could get seriously prosecuted for that. Nah, they won't get me for that, mate. No, you're exaggerating. So anyway, rather than getting angry about it, I left the call. And I just ignored it and said, all right, fine, see you later. But it's the same here, right? And I bet you're going to have landlords that say, no, everything's fine. I looked at it myself. That light switch works. And this, you know.
Yeah. Student accommodation is one for that. Landlords start, get the HMO license. They do it. And because they're so involved in it, they then know everything.
Yeah.
And there are landlords that know a lot. But there's a difference between someone competent and non-qualified and someone competent and qualified. There's a reason they're holding that qualification, and it's accountability, and the law wants accountability. You can say you can install a system to the exactly same standard as me, but there's zero accountability on you. There's zero insurance, there's zero protection, and it's all about backside covering, isn't it? Let's face it. Yeah. The whole system is, if someone has the worst possible accident and you're stood in court, you've got no accountability. You can say, I might have been seen there, but I didn't do it.
Yeah.
From us, you're going to get your certificates, your paperwork, your invoices. You've got that evidence that it's nothing to do with you as a landlord, and it is to do with them as an installer. So that's often interesting. Is, oh, I've worked with 10 different electricians, and they've all done it this way. And well, yes, there are different ways to do almost everything. You know, there's no two car brands that are exactly the same. You know, they've all got four wheels, they've all got a body, but the engines are all slightly different. You know, the decor's slightly different, and that's the same for the electrical industry. The foundations are the same, but beyond that, things are different. So you can't, you know, just because you work with 10 electricians or whatever, you can't assume that you then know more than the new one coming in. So, yeah.
And there's something in business law called vicarious liability, mm-hmm. which effectively, it affects agents actually in many, many other industries. But basically, if I instruct you to go and do a job and you're not qualified, you go and do that job and then something goes wrong. Well, it's like I was saying earlier on, it comes back to you, Mr. and Mrs. Landlord, as the person that instructed that. Now, here's something interesting. If you have a letting agent, and you authorize the instruction of that landlord, by vicarious liability, you, Mr. and Mrs. Landlord, and you, Mr. and Mrs. Letting Agent, are involved.
Are both, yeah, both accountable for what that, whatever that issue may have been. Yeah, absolutely. Because you're all
the golden rule here, and hopefully, I think everybody's going to find a lot of very useful information here. Certainly to help them move forward with this law and understand it better. But look, like I said earlier on, my whole philosophy about the anonymous landlord thing is to bring the landlords away from the day-to-day, the risk, the massive, intense requirement for education. Because look, the landlord, if a landlord's going to be a DIY landlord, there's 178 pieces of legislation they have to know. There's another 100 different processes of compliance they have to follow. They also have to understand this of EICR so they don't get ripped off. Same with gas safety, same with everything, even weird things like when to register a deposit. People think it's 30 days after the tenancy starts. It's not. It's 30 days after you receive the deposit. Yeah. Everyone gets it slightly wrong. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is the anonymous landlord is just that. Get people away from the risk and the dealings of their property so that they can just enjoy the profits.
Absolutely. So, as an investor, rather than, you know, the dog's body that has to do everything.
That's right. And so, you know, that what you're giving here is perfect for that because it enables people. Look, I'd say just go and bloody use a letting agent. Go and use a letting agent, have a good mortgage advisor, get a good lawyer, all of those things. Anyway, I've waffled on there. I'm stealing your thunder here.
Use the expert as the underlying message there, I think.
There you go. Perfectly put. So let's look at the actual property itself now. And I wanted to find out, first of all, if I asked you about if there's anything landlords can do. Now I want to understand if there's anything tenants can do to look after the electrics in the property. Actually, landlords or tenants, the ongoing maintenance and care for their electrical installation.
As with a lot of things, you've got a slow puncture. The best thing to do is to get it fixed before it becomes a big puncture or a tear. And it's the same. If you're starting to see a problem happen, the quicker you identify it and fix it, the less of a problem it's going to be down the long run. And the way tenants can help is by identifying those issues, passing it back on as quick as possible, but respecting things really. Treat the electrics. Remember that there's now going to be a cost involved for the landlords to maintain this system. You know, treat it with a little bit of respect, and you know, you don't have to pull a pull cord like you're trying to sort of let off some steam in a steam engine. It doesn't need that kind of effort. So, you know, work within your environment. And if something's not working right, report it quickly so that it can be fixed for you. So again, it doesn't cause another problem down the line. But other than that, it's just, yeah, treat it with a bit of care. It takes a second longer to look at the plug when you're plugging it in than just aimlessly go like this and end up scratching and causing damage to the front of the socket, which inevitably leads to cracks and weaker points over the course of many years. Yeah. So absolutely, just same with hanging things from pendants and stuff. Make sure what you're doing isn't going to damage the fitting. Make sure it's going to look after what's there at least. It's not too heavy. And if it is, take responsibility.
Yeah, that's
a message to the letting agent to say, I've got a new light, I'd like to put it up, can I get permission?
Yeah.
A lot of landlords will say that's fine, but there's an expectation that you put that back at end of tenancy. And in a lot of cases, landlords, why would you mind whether someone changes a pendant for a different type of light fitting? If they're there for 3 or 4 years, it's better than someone only being in 6 months and constantly having someone new, because they don't feel at home. So, I think that open communication, sort of understanding what a problem might be early on, which is really for education, and passing that information on when you know about it. And just, a little bit of respect for the equipment. Treat it like it's yours, which it is. All the time you're in the property, it is yours. You're using it, it's someone else's to ensure that it's there when you get there, but it's yours while you're using it.
Yeah, it's your home. Yeah, good advice. That's really good advice. And I think a lot of people are going to take away a lot from this. And before, I'm going to actually share a story with you in a minute. But before I do that, Actually, no, I'm going to give the story now, actually, because I wanted to kind of explain. The reason I'm giving this story is because this is how I and we, as my company, decided that we were going to start working with LE Electrical, right? So we our previous electrician was really busy and didn't have any availability. So we found you through recommendation, and I had a requirement for the office. I don't know if you remember this, but I wanted to have some lighting improvements to the office. So I invited you over, you came and had a look, and I told you what I wanted. Now, you've got, this is what we were talking about earlier, you've got one of two types of electrician here. You've got one that could think, hello, rub their hands together and make some money. And you've got the other who wants to make a relationship, wants to build an ongoing relationship, not just to do a quick couple hundred quid job here, but do a series of jobs in the future. So you came over to my office and I told you what I was looking to achieve with lighting. And you said the exact words, now you don't need to do anything, mate. Just get an LED strip along here. It costs about £5 off Amazon. Mm-hmm. And then just do this over here and do this over here. He said, you don't need me. He said, I'll just charge you a few hundred quid to do that. He said, that's no point. You don't need to do it. Anyway, now I'm not saying that you should get electricians to come and do stuff for free. What I'm saying is that open and honesty is what every single landlord, every single letting agent, and every single anybody should look for in a electrician and any trade, actually. So I just wanted to share that story with you.
Yeah.
And say thank you for that.
That's all right. That's why I don't drive a Porsche.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is. I've got, you know, I'd rather work with someone so that they know they get, because we're not a cheap company, but we are good value. Because what we do lasts longer. What we do is good quality. What we do is more of what the customer wants and requires less alterations and changes going forward.
Yeah.
And it does stem from not having my own financial interests as a priority, but having yours as a client, as a, what do you want to achieve and how best to achieve it? And then if we can fill that box by being the people that do it, we've then built that relationship where we're then, you know, likely to then sort of win that business. But yeah, that has to come from somewhere. And it comes from working off of the foundations of giving the best advice to the client when we give it, whether it's in our interest or not. So, yeah. So
thank you very much.
Kind of ethos.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one. Good way to be. So from here, by the way, look, if you are in and around, where do you cover? Portsmouth and surrounding?
So it is Portsmouth and surrounding, yeah. I mean, all the way up to sort of Wasash and Parkgate, and then sort of over towards the edges of sort of Chichester, up to sort of maybe Clanfield area. We do travel beyond that for bigger clients that have got more properties that are a little bit more spread out. Mm-hmm. But that's the area we try and keep. We try and keep the mileage low and keep the guys working close to home so they don't spend too much time on the road.
Okay, so it's basically, let's just say Portsmouth and about a 30 or 40 mile radius, maybe a bit further if it's multiple properties. What's your website, or how can people contact LE Electrical?
So we're on Checkatrade. You can find us on Google. You can find us on Facebook and things like that as well. The website is just le-electrical.co.uk. And yeah, it's the same everywhere. It's just that everywhere. We've managed to get that on all our social media platforms as well. So find us, add us, and use us.
So we're talking about, it's LE-electrical, Facebook, website, Checkatrade, everywhere. So look, let's wrap that up. I just wanted to say thank you ever so much for that absolute gem of an interview. So much information, so valuable, and probably second nature to you, but new and hot topic for everybody else. So absolutely, thank you ever so much. And I just want to share with everybody and say, look, this is just one thing, right? And remember, to be the best version of yourself at one thing, you've got to be the best version of yourself at everything. My name's Tom Soane, and this is The Anonymous Landlord. Thank you for joining me, and I hope you enjoyed this podcast. But before you go to the next episode, I really want to hear from you. Just search Tom Soane on any social media, or just email me, tom@pinkstreet.co.uk. I'd love to know your thoughts on this episode. And if you need any help with your own situation, just get in touch. I'll answer every email and every message, I promise. Anyway, see you in the next podcast, and remember, being a landlord is hard. Being an anonymous landlord is easy. Invest, enjoy, repeat, and grow.